up every morning in a house that was built by slaves. And I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn.
This sort of intelligence tradecraft happens all the time. We are probably participating in some of it, some country somewhere. Is the difference then that it's happening to the United States?
Let's be candid here. Do we really believe that the DNC is the only organization in the United States that the Russians have hacked? No, I don't believe that.
Don't let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great, that somehow we need to make it great again, because this right now is the greatest country on earth.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09. Today is Tuesday. It's July 26, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, and welcome to another business day. Isn't it nice to hear a speech where the person giving it is just almost in tears, and you can just feel the passion coming through? Maybe I'm just a homer for Michelle Obama, but what a speech last night. And it really did take the center stage at the Democratic National Convention, speaking from the heart. You have to even wonder if there was really even text involved in that. If you missed it, you missed one of the good political speeches. And funny, as I was going through things this morning, Sam B., who has the comedian from, she used to be on The Daily Show, now has her own show. She said, making a joke about this morning, she says, well, I guess we'll hear parts of this 4 years from now at the Republican National Convention. Maybe so, but I doubt it. It was more of a personal experience for Michelle Obama. Certainly that Mama Grizzly that we heard about at one of the Republican conventions, I think, in the past. But that's the political news today, and certainly lots of questions you heard there in the opening montage. Do we really believe that the Democratic Party is the only organization that's been hacked? No. Do we believe it's the only organization that's rigged? No. Lots of questions that still remain to be answered. The FBI has joined the investigation of all of this to see if there is, in fact, a Russia involvement in that. That's one of the new developments today in that story. There's a couple of others that we'll get to later on as well as we move through the morning. Lots of politics today on the Steve Cochran Show coming up right after this broadcast this morning. Let's get to the WGN Market Desk. Here's your overnight intel from around the world. Chinese stocks gained, but other Asian markets fell today after Wall Street declined on losses of energy stocks yesterday. Shanghai Composite Index gained about 0.5% today. Hong Kong up as well. Wall Street stocks fell as investors took a break after 4 weeks of gains that brought the market to record highs. Energy companies fell more than any other shares, but analysts say the sale was benign, foreseeable following a run-up in prices. The Dow Jones Industrial Average still lost about 77 points. Energy stocks tumbled as the price of oil slid 2%, benchmark U.S. crude oil hovering right around $43 a barrel. The dollar against the yen declined and gained against the euro. Here's what's coming up today. The Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller Index of Home Prices for May is released. The Conference Board releases the Consumer Confidence Index for July. And the Commerce Department releases new home sales for June. Federal Reserve policymakers begin a two-day meeting to set interest rates, although it is unlikely that they will actually raise interest rates. Those are things that could drive the markets as we move through today. Britain's decision to quit the European Union has elevated the risk to U.S. financial stability, though they remain moderate. This is according to a report from the U.S. Treasury Department. The report was issued Monday by Treasury's Office of Financial Research, comes just a day after global finance officials promised to protect the world economy from the shockwaves of Britain's Brexit referendum last month and boost sluggish growth. But there are questions about just how much government can do. Private sector already making plans for Brexit, and that begins our conversation this morning. Ted Reed is an expert on the airlines. He's with us this morning on The Opening Bell. He's the airlines reporter for The Street and Forbes, covering airlines since 1989, starting first at the Miami Herald. You may also recognize that name from a book, American Airlines, U.S. Airways, and the Creation of the World's Largest Airline. Ted Reed, good morning. Nice to have you back on The Opening Bell, Ted.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So I reading with a lot of interest about this because we've been talking with our other airline folks, including Rick Sini, who runs a Fair Compare, that Brexit is going to have an impact on flights to the UK. And you've already found evidence of that being planned for.
well, being anticipated that there's going to be a decline in traffic from Great Britain to the United States, not necessarily the other way, because currency changes favor Americans.
So what airlines are making plans for this, and how significant is it going to be?
Well, they all vary. We have three U.S. carriers that fly to Europe, of course. One's based in Chicago is United, and they have talked about incremental cuts in the rest of the year, incremental cuts to Great Britain and the United Kingdom. Delta plans a 6% cut, and American hasn't yet said what it's going to do. That's because Americans, in partnership with British Airways, and I think they have to talk about it before they tell us what they're going to do.
All of these airlines are projecting revenue growth declines in reports that they've issued for the third quarter coming up. Do you think they're already starting to price a little of this in at all, or are they going to make? Is there a money-making option here available?
Well, they are all going to be profitable in the third quarter. A lot of people are going to Europe from the United States, so they're going to be profitable. But their revenue trends, what we measure revenue by something called unit revenue, which is revenue per mile per passenger. That's declining, and fares are down.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, I'm Dave Schreiber. Chinese stocks gained today, but other Asian markets fell after Wall Street declined because of losses for energy stocks. Energy stocks tumbled as the price of oil slid 2%, leaving U.S. benchmark crude down 12% this month. The energy industry faces concern that growing inventories of gasoline during the peak U.S. summer driving season and a steady rise in working drilling rigs will push up crude inventories, depressing prices and profits. On Wall Street, stocks fell as investors took a break after 4 weeks of gains that took the market to record highs. Energy companies fell more than other shares. The Dow lost 77.79 points. The S&P 500 lost 6.55 points. The NASDAQ Composite lost 2.53 points. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Ted Reed this morning, airline writer for Forbes and The Street, talking about airlines and their plans for Brexit. Ted, I was not aware that these routes to Europe were so big for some of the airlines. Delta, I think, especially 35% of their routes.
That seems a little high. I think capacity in the transatlantic is closer to 15-20% amount of capacity that the airlines have for transatlantic.
And so the airlines are making plans for Brexit. What do you see, or when do you see them starting some of this? And why does American Airlines seem to be quiet about it?
Well, American has to work out with British Airways exactly what they're going to do. They're a partner with British Airways. They have a transatlantic joint venture where they share revenues, and I think that they just weren't quite ready to tell the media and the analysts last week because they hadn't quite decided in discussions with their partner what they were going to do. I found it was interesting. I just heard you guys talking about falling oil cost, and that, of course, is going to keep a lid on fares also for the summer.
Most of the airlines have been, feeing us to death. Do you see that trend continuing as we move away from the Brexit conversation here, just to a little bit of the overall health of the airlines? This revenue, you said, is going to continue to go up, but these fees, are they going to change anytime soon?
No, fees have been a very good model for the airline industry, which historically, until very recently, has been an industry that lost money. And fees make it a more reasonable, rational industry, and in most cases, people can accept fees. If you carry a bag on the aircraft, you realize that there's a lot of cost involved with that, and it's acceptable to a lot of people to pay them, and it's very helpful to the industry to have profit be more consistent.
One of the other things you've written about lately is Alaska Air. They are gaining shares. They're doing something that apparently some of the other airlines aren't doing or can't do. What's the story with Alaska Air, and is there an example there for the other airlines?
Well, the main thing they're doing right now is doing a merger, which they're very important in Washington, Oregon, and Alaska, and they're doing a merger with an airline called Virgin Atlantic that has a good presence at San Francisco and Los Angeles in California. So the hope is that we have four major national airlines right now, and Alaska could become a fifth major airline with a base on the West Coast.
United Airlines seems to be moving some stuff around. They also announced this new TSA speed check at some of the airports, including O'Hare. Where that's already been in place, does it seem to be helping with the TSA problems?
I don't think it's quite in place yet. The new lanes that United is going to build, just as Delta and American have been building new lanes at their most important hubs. You know, you got to get passengers through security more quickly than we have been doing early, than we were doing early in the summer, and the airlines are stepping in to help out at their key airports. But of course, it will help.
What are you seeing in terms of terrorist threats? I know that the last time we talked with the fare folks who monitor fares, there were some sales going on, but people were concerned about flying to especially France.
I think that's one of the things in what we started talking about concerns about Europe. I think that, although it didn't come up on any of the airlines' earnings calls this month, I think Americans are wonder, you know, do I really want to go to France? Do I really want to go to Europe this summer if I'm making my summer trip? There's just fears, unspoken fears, a lot of the time, that maybe that's not the best place to go. And that, you know, in mass, that affects booking patterns. The other problem with Brexit countries, of course, is the currency declines. And to the extent that your passengers buy tickets in Europe, you're getting a little less revenue.
Is that back to the Brexit discussion? What kind of quagmire are we going to get into in terms of the different rules and regulations for the European Union, for the UK, for the United States? That's three sets of rules that pilots flying from the U.S. are going to have to go through, right?
Well, we have to start renegotiating our bilateral treaties with Great Britain. It's just going to be a lot of time and energy spent to get sort of back to where we were. You know, interestingly, on the American call, President American said right now and in the near term, we're going to get revenues from people flying to New York, to London, in order to have these discussions about what to do next. So to that extent, so far, Brexit's been helping American Airlines.
And we talked about the flights coming this way, but, you know, the flights going that way, there are some real good deals to be had if you want to plan a trip to Europe, aren't there?
Yes, I was just checking United fares from Chicago, and there's a lot of fares in the $1,000 to $1,200 range for the summer right now, and there's a lot of thought that fares to Europe are in steep decline this summer.
As we watch the political conventions, the Republicans just wrapped up, the Democrats are starting, how big of a deal will it be if we have a sea change in politics, if for instance, Donald Trump is elected or Hillary Clinton is the winner? Would either of those impact the airline industry worse than the other?
I haven't thought about that. It's hard to say. What you mean? You think that people are going to move to Europe if Donald Trump's elected?
Well, no. Just to, you know, other economists say that with especially with Trump, there could be a lot of economic fallout in terms of business. There are also worldwide CEOs are already concerned about this. Some of the things that he wants to do in terms of renegotiating treaties, and I'm just curious about the airline industry whether they're concerned or not.
I don't think that the impact, whatever it might be, is clear enough that it's time to start worrying about it yet. Seeing as how we have plenty of other worries about Brexit right now, the currency worries, we have terror worries, and I think we've got enough other worries now, but without worrying about what may or may not happen when someone may or may not get elected.
Yeah, it's nice to not worry and just get on a plane and go somewhere and have a good time, right?
Yes, it's a time. Maybe it's a better opportunity to get away from worrying about our election.
Exactly. Ted Reed, thank you for being with us on the opening bell today. Ted Reed's a reporter for The Street and Forbes. You can read his latest at Forbes.com and also at TheStreet.com. He's an airlines reporter, been an airlines reporter for a long time. Get a chance to check out his book, To American Airlines, U.S. Airways and the Creation of the World's Largest Airline.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone. The buzz shifting from virtual reality or VR headsets and what they can do to actual content for those headsets. There are so many VR headsets on the market or soon to be. The focus for video game companies now is making real games that will be worth playing on those immersive devices.
Make them feel like they're just like part of their games for the first time.
Jennifer Dean at Sony says the company is excited to make VR actually tangible for people in their home.
It is a pivotal moment for VR right now. All eyes are kind of on that technology.
Dean says all the big companies are now laser focused on VR.
Something crazy to think about, you know, 10 years ago, we were going to be playing with virtual worlds in our living room.
PlayStation VR, Sony's headset, will be on the market in October. The headset to cost about $400, but there are many more VR products out there, even down to many units that work with your smartphone. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:38. Welcome back to the program. It is The Opening Bell, and we're glad you're along with us. Do you have any money in your wallet right now? If you're like me, you probably don't. I'm pretty bad at money management, cash management especially. I tend not to carry cash and have to borrow money all the time from my coworkers, and they don't like that. But generally, money management is a skill that has to be, I think, taught early on, and some people are better at it than others. Some cities are better at it than others, and that brings us to our next conversation with creditcards.com, and one of the senior writers there, Fred Williams, is with us this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Fred.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. So give us the bad news. How does Chicago rank in your report on the best and worst cities for money management?
Well, I don't think it's bad news at all. We put Chicago at fourth highest on our list of good money managing cities.
Hey, finally, we're in the top
pretty
five.
Pretty good. Out of 25.
So. Yeah. So finally, we're in the top five of something good, which is nice. So how do you rank this? How did you come about these rankings?
Well, we looked at credit scores, but when you just look at credit scores, it turns out that the cities with a high income and good economy tend to do well, which isn't surprising. So we try to factor out some of those economic factors and look at median income, unemployment rates, education levels. And when you hold those things constant, you get a picture of what the credit score would be for a city if you know, all things being equal. So the bottom line for Chicago is credit score is 674, but we had predicted score was a little under that at 662. So another way of saying that Chicago's credit score is better than its income and other economic factors would lead you to expect.
And so why is the credit score such a good indicator of whether or not you could manage your money well?
Well, it's an indicator that's available. It factors in a lot of important things like whether you pay your bills on time, whether you've got a lot of debt compared to your available credit. So it measures a lot of those factors. It's not infallible. A lot of people, for example, younger people, haven't had time to build up credit history. So they may be great credit risks and just nobody knows it yet.
And there are also, I guess, some people, too, who may just, you know, have problems meeting deadlines, and that includes paying bills. So that could impact they may have a lot of money. They just don't know how to pay bills on time.
Well, yeah, that's what we're trying to measure here is that even if you have a good income, you know, usually on average, that does help you increase your chance of a good credit score. But for cities and for individuals, it's not always the case. Yeah, some cities just seem to be doing better. One thing in Chicago's favor is a low utilization rate on credit cards. So of the available credit, Chicagoans are using on average 29%, according to Experian data. And the average is 30%. So that's a little below average.
Yeah, and let's focus on that just a little bit. That's interesting interesting statistic because that it suggests that a few people are using their credit cards and you may be paying for things, you know, with money on hand, doesn't it?
Yeah, or just, just not overdoing it with credit. Yeah, paying for things without using credit and using cash more. Yeah, that's what it suggests. It could also mean there's if you have a good credit limit, you don't need to go up to your you don't you need to use that much of it, so your utilization rate is pretty low.
Well, give us some advice. It's not very often that we get to talk with somebody who has a lot of expertise in this. If we have one of those low credit scores, if we're not doing things the right way, what's the best way to improve that and head in the other direction?
Yeah, it's no secret, but it's no magic bullet either. It's a matter of making sure all bills are paid on time, because one late bill can really torpedo your score for a while. So some of this is out of people's control. Let me just mention this first. We looked at factors like cities with a lot of divorced people tend to have higher or lower credit scores. Separation, divorce can it's just one of those unexpecteds, and you know, bills can just go unpaid when one party or the other is expecting their spouse to pay it, and boom, you know, something's got to hit your credit score. But so other than that, you know, the unexpected things, unemployment, separation, divorce, things you can control are like paying your bills on time, not loading up your credit card. And that's, you know, it's been said a lot, but it's very important not to load up the credit card and just make minimum payments. That's, you know, a really bad idea for long-term finances, and it will.
So, let's say you're getting ready to get married, and you're going to join your finances together and make that. Can you do a credit check on your significant other before you get married? Because I hear a lot of people say that this is an issue, that they didn't realize how much debt is there when they get involved with somebody.
Yeah, I've seen some ads on the internet for people offering to check around for you. I think the best way to go about it is, you know, especially if you're thinking of getting hitched, is the honesty, you know, show your credit report and ask to look at theirs as a part of the whole getting to know you and trust thing.
It is one of those, I can tell by just your slowness in response that it's like a minefield, isn't it, when you get into these questions with people, even with family?
Well, it can be. I mean, it is awkward, to say the least, but it shouldn't be. And certainly if you're coming forward and saying, hey, you know, I want us to be on a total honesty, transparent basis, and that's a good way to go forward, I think. And, well, marriage isn't, that's not my specialty.
Right.
But being honest about your finances is, you know, that's a no-brainer. That's a good thing to do long term.
So I think we're all curious, what were the worst cities on your list?
In our analysis, Baltimore and Washington, D.C. were at the last place and next to last, respectively. And then it was Tampa and Miami, two from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the mid-Atlantic here in suburban Maryland, so I'm not sure what it is that I'm doing wrong, if I'm contributing to that poor ranking. But these cities both had above average income, and in the case of Washington, the most income of any city on our list. But the score just, you know, was above average, but it was not, you know, knocking it out of the park the way the income figures were. So that's why they got points off.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about making sure you pay your bills on time. I was surprised recently to hear that even if you were a couple of hours late on a bill, or even just a day, that it could actually knock several points, maybe even as much as 10 to 15 points off your credit score. Is that accurate?
I believe so. Late is late. If it gets reported to the credit bureau, it goes on your report, then it's there. It is. It's an unpaid. It's a paid late. Even if you catch it up, it will still show up as a bill that was paid late, unless, you know, if, say, some credit card companies will give you a break if you're a little bit late. You can call them up and say, hey, you know, I made it up. I paid. It was just a one-time thing. And if it is only, you know, something you don't do all the time, they may back it off and not report it.
And if I heard from somebody wanted me to ask this question about mortgages. Let's say your mortgage company gives you until the 15th to pay. It's actually due on the 1st, but it, you know, says you're not going to be late charged a late fee until the 15th. If paying that later than the 1st affect your score at all, or does that raise any red flags anywhere?
I would have to research that more. I do know in the situation of credit cards, they you do have a grace period. You can pay up to the last day. But they do now on credit reports have a look at how soon you're paying that bill, even within the grace period. It will show how much of a balance you have on there, even if you're paying the whole balance off by the end of the grace period. So with credit cards anyway, it will help your score and your credit profile to pay the bill earlier during the grace period. I mean, the first day you get that statement and you know what the bill is for the last billing cycle would be, you know, an ideal time to pay it.
I hear a lot of people talking...
Mortgages, I don't know.
I hear a lot of people talking about credit scores more now than it seems maybe 5 years ago. I think that's because a lot of companies are offering that score on their services to people. If that's not something that you know, how important is it for people to know their credit score?
Yeah, I think it is important to keep track of it. Know where you are. Obviously, if you're never going to get credit again, if you're not going to buy a car or a house, it's not terribly important. But here's another thing that's it's good at doing is if you monitor it month to month, if there's a change, and you're not aware why there should be a change, it might be because accounts are being opened in your name. So it's a way of monitoring your credit situation and kind of keeping an eye out for red flags. Fraud that might happen. There are more real-time ways of doing that, but it's good to know what it is. And most people's credit card statement now, or their online statement, has access to some credit score, so it's pretty easy to check.
Fred Williams, one of the senior writers at creditcards.com, their best and worst cities for money management. Fred, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:53 back on The Opening Bell at the WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures pointing up by just a point. The S&P futures down. NASDAQ futures are up just a little bit. Generally across the board, markets generally mixed in Asia, up and down. The Nikkei down in Europe. The London FTSE 100 up this morning. Let's get a look at the commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. In all the years I've been covering the agricultural story, I have never seen a year where crop conditions have been so good this far into the growing season. For example, looking at the report yesterday, we now see that 64% of the corn crop is in pollination stage. And when we look at crop conditions, traders were expecting a decline. Didn't happen. 76% of the corn crop, good to excellent, the same as a week ago. Wisconsin continues to lead with 86% good to excellent, but Illinois not far behind. Both Illinois and Iowa showing 82% good to excellent. On the other hand, Ohio only 60%. Then we turn to soybeans blooming, 76% of the nation's crop in bloom. Conditions unchanged from last week, 71% good to excellent. Again, Wisconsin leading the way with 86%, followed by Iowa at 81%, Illinois 77%, and Indiana 73%. Barring a weather catastrophe between now and harvest, we're headed for a bumper crop. And grain prices reflected that yesterday, particularly soybeans down 22 cents on the nearby. On the upside yesterday, live cattle futures reacting to the cattle on feed report Friday. Live cattle, feeder cattle futures up the limit at the Mercantile Exchange. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. 5:55. Before we leave you, just a couple of notes. First, General Mills is expanding that flour recall over possible E. coli. We've been reporting on this for several weeks. Started about February 10th. That's the certain dates used by February 10th is one of those. The Centers for Disease Control has said that flour produced at the General Mills plant in Kansas City, Missouri, is the source of that now sickened 46 people in 21 states. Make sure you double-check General Mills flour again. Also, one other note is just on our calendar. We'll be watching a couple of big reports coming out later today. Again, the Federal Reserve begins its meeting. The Case-Shiller's out today, consumer confidence. all of those things could drive the markets.